My Secular Sobriety is an addiction recovery podcast giving voice to the secular person in recovery. So, yes, I'm John, and I am your host, and I'm here with Ben, our co-host for My Secular Sobriety. It's a fairly new podcast. We just got started. Oh, well, this is episode 7. So for a couple of months anyway. And the whole idea of this podcast was to highlight options for people in recovery who are, you know, identify as atheist, agnostic, or just in any way secular. In fact, they don't even have to identify as secular. They might very well be religious, but not necessarily want their religion to do with their recovery. And there are options available for people beyond the 12 steps and AA. And I was really hoping that we could highlight those options for people. And Ben, I've known for quite a while. I guess we met back in 2014, and he has participated with me in a lot of podcasts on the other podcasts that I do. And it's just been always fun to talk with him. And so I asked him to, you know, co-host this with me because I knew there would be episodes like this where we wouldn't have a guest, and I need someone else to talk to. So Ben, how you doing?
Pretty good, John. Been enjoying the nice weather here. I'm sure it's been probably even a little bit warmer down there.
Yeah, it is nice. I was actually up in Chicago last week, and it was cold as hell. And So it's nice to be back here. And yeah, it was really nice. It's like sweater weather, like in the 60s yesterday anyway.
Yeah.
And so nice weather for taking the dog for a walk.
Yeah, for sure.
Anyway, why don't we get started here. I thought maybe it might be good, Ben, just to kind of introduce you. I mean, I had an introductory episode where I talked a little bit about myself. So let's introduce you, and I'll let you begin.
Sounds good. Well, I've been sober for coming up on 13 years. Let's see. I don't know. I'll give a just brief little recap of it. I drank in high school a little bit, nothing to where it was problematic, but I can look back and say that I really always enjoyed it a lot. And then probably right about early college is when it really became a pretty obvious problem. And like many people, had a little bit of legal problems because of it, life problems as well, you know, just not moving forward career-wise and, you know, just emotional issues. And then I finally got a second DUI in 2007, and that prompted me to take a harder look. And I've been sober since then, actually. So, like we talk about on this podcast sometime, went to AA. Courts asked me to go there and kind of took a liking to it and developed a sense of community there. And, probably I wasn't super active in service in 12-step communities, but I was definitely active in my home group big time. I enjoyed my time in AA, and I still go from time to time. And, you know, you and I met at a secular conference for people that go to 12-step meetings. And at that time, I was growing just very tired of a lot of the things I heard in meetings and just questioning a lot of what was going on. And it was really nice to touch base with people who thought like you, and and gone to secular meetings pretty much since then, off and on. And I don't really go to too many meetings anymore at all. I've got two young kids, keeps me busy. I stay home with the kids right now and have some other business interests as well that I can do from home. But keeps me busy.
You know, were you, I know that you went through a religious phase, but was that before you started going to these AA meetings, or was that during that when you first started going?
I grew up going to church, but I never really believed for myself. I, you know, it was pretty laid back church. And, in my like my mid-20s, just like a crisis of what the hell do I want to do with my life finally struck me. And you know, I kind of look at it as an offshoot of my drinking problem too, you know, just looking for some direction. And I definitely got very, very religious. I would have told you I was a born again Christian and whatnot, but still drinking. And I think I've said it on other podcasts. It was a dangerous combo.
Were you actually going to a church and everything?
Yeah, I was off and on. Like, I wasn't a hardcore church going member. We grew up Methodist, and I went to a United Methodist church. I don't know. That's pretty
mainstream.
Yeah, pretty mainstream, pretty laid back. You know, but yeah, I delved hard into the Bible and read it. I was super.
See, I was like that too. So I when I was like 19. I first started having really serious problems with alcohol. And so I had to leave school, KU. And so my life was just a mess. I mean, it was just a mess. And so I also started getting into the Bible. I read the Bible, and I really thought that religion was going to be my answer. I knew my older brother had kind of had problems drinking and drugging when he was younger. And he became like really super religious and straightened himself out and had a decent life. And I thought, I don't know. Anyway, I tried it and it wasn't for me.
I was pretty hardcore into it for probably like 2 or 3 years.
Mm.
And but it was very self-centered, looking back at it. Like, it was just about making myself feel like I was doing the right thing and then holding that over other people in a really judgmental asshole way. It kind of went along with having a drinking problem really well, actually. But you know, it also created a lot of guilt, because I, you know, I've said it on other podcasts too, I never felt okay about my drinking my whole life. It was never like, oh, this is what you should do and people are cool who drink. It was, I always had really conflicted feelings about my drinking, and I think getting religious didn't necessarily help that.
You know, I did too. I almost always had some measure of guilt after I drank, you know, because normally most of the time I would just get trashed, and sometimes more trashed than other people were getting trashed. And, I just always felt a little bit of shame, but that got worse over time as I went out into the work world and was trying to get on my own two feet and didn't seem to be able to do it. Mainly because, you know, drinking away my paycheck and not being able to function at work. And it's just, you know, on and on.
I was super enabled by my parents. My dad was a physician. So, and he had his own issues too. So I think it was easy for him to just dole out the cash to me and not want to, you know.
See, that's one thing that you had that I didn't have. You grew up with an alcoholic, and so you saw the worst of alcoholism, you know, through your father. You saw him, you know, passed out and all kinds of.
Yeah. And it's, most people don't think, you know, that a physician could really hold their life together that way. I mean, I don't think he was drinking 24/7, but it was, I definitely, I've gone to some Al-Anon meetings and meetings for family, and that stuff definitely works for me better than 12-step for the alcoholic. You know, maybe somebody that would be hardcore in 12-step would say I'm not a real alcoholic because of that, but I definitely know that I'm somebody who shouldn't drink. But the family stuff definitely works better for me, and that's the side that I'm naturally drawn to. And I think even I went back and got my counseling certification too, and was drug and alcohol counselor for approximately 4 years. And I enjoyed working with the family a great deal. And that's my bread and butter. Yeah. Yep.
Well, I can understand that. You know, I know in my family, I grew up with just mental illness in my family, but that was kind of hidden away, and it was easy to hide from us. Whereas
kind of the same effect, really. Well, I mean, you know, it's kind of a family secret where people don't talk about it, and you're not really supposed to ask about it or talk about it, and everybody keep quiet about it.
Yeah. Anyway, I thought about that because I was talking to Angela last week, and I was telling her about my early time in AA when I when we'd go out on these 12-step calls, and I would see people in various stages of detox. And I told her, I said, it was good for me to see that so I could understand, you know, the seriousness of alcoholism, just how bad it really was. And she said, you know, some of us don't need to see that. We didn't need to be reminded because we grew up with it. And that was a real kind of a wake up for me, because I didn't grow up with that. And I was like the only alcoholic I knew. So it was kind of good to, for me, I didn't go that far. So when I was out there watching people go through some really serious withdrawal, and I saw how painful and horrible it was, it just solidified into my brain that this is definitely, there's a definitely a physiological component to it, whether you want to call it a disease or whatever. And I did not want to go there.
Yeah. Well, my codependence would kick in when I'd go to those things. I had this one guy that was always on and off again, drunk, sober. And I'd go and clean his house up and fold his clothes up and pick up all the piss soaked clothes and stuff. I look back at that now and I'm like, man. But and this is some of the beef I have with 12 step. Everybody comes at this from a different place. Some of us had alcoholic families, some of us didn't. Some of us were to the point of such physical dependence, we went through DTs all the time, and some of us didn't. And these stupid purity tests that go on in the room sometimes about who's a real alcoholic or the worst alcoholic or this or that is just annoying.
Yeah, that happens more and more, it seems. And there's a string of thought in AA. I think I find it online more often because I don't really go to any kind of meetings outside of a secular meeting. But there's this line of thought where to be a pure alcoholic, you have to be the alcoholic as defined in the big book, and only a spiritual experience can help you. And if you can get sober without a spiritual experience, then you must not be a real alcoholic. It's kind of crazy.
Right. Oh yeah, AA is batting 100%. If you if you go by that logic, you can rule out anybody who doesn't need that. Then they won't really.
So that's kind of weird. Now, I guess, you know, those people exist. I mean, if they're online, they're in a meeting somewhere, right? Out there in the real world. I just don't happen to encounter them because I choose not to. I mean, I kind of got to the point where I couldn't stand it anymore. And so I can only tolerate the secular group. And I know that you started having problems with it too. Just the hardcore religious nature of the program.
Yeah, well, I think this isn't even grandiose. I think my presence at certain meetings, people knew how I felt and that I would speak up about how I felt. And again, I feel like I did so in a respectful manner. I would say, this is just how it works for me. But it would change the tone of a meeting sometimes to where everybody would go on the attack about that pure alcoholic or real alcoholic stuff all the time. And
that's kind of weird.
It was annoying, and I do think that's part of the cult-like nature of certain meetings. I think where they're going to like chase out or push out anything that doesn't meet the agenda, and I don't think any of that's conscious. I think a lot of it's subconscious.
I do too. I truly do. It's like you know, from my experience, you just kind of adapt the norms of the group, and you and it's probably a survival mechanism that we just have ingrained in us, you know, that I need these people if I'm going to make it, so I'm going to think and do and say like they think and do and say. And when I start hearing something contrary to what the norm of the group is, that to me is threatening, and therefore I see it as negative or you know, something along those lines, because I was that way. I mean, I'm looking back many, many years ago, even when someone would just question some of the basic tenets that I believed in, I just was more than just uncomfortable with it. I just thought that person was wrong and crazy to think that way. It's just, anyway.
It's very tribal. It is very tribal. Or it's like somebody with coronavirus enters your community and you got to get that out of here. It's like, get that disease thinking out of here. We got to worry about ourselves. So it makes sense.
But, you know, I was also thinking about that also on the other side of it. So you've got the people who are in 12-step programs who are like that, where they think that their way is the only true way. But then you've got this other side where the people are so anti 12 step that they won't even, you can't even have a conversation with them. I mean, it's just, I was thinking about that today because I wanted to reach out to some of these people for the podcast. And I think some of them probably just don't like me, period, if I have anything at all to do with, you know, 12 steps at all. But, and I'm not even that big into it even, you know, I could take it or leave it. I don't really care. In fact, I've kind of grown away from the 12 steps themselves. You know, I see them as just kind of a nice little framework. I mean, of experiences that we've had, they're just laid out in that weird language. But, and most of them just kind of things that you just naturally do, like we talked about before. And I don't think they're like magic where you got to do them to get sober. I'm very laid back about it, and I don't care what people do. In fact, that's one reason I want to do this podcast is I wanted to kind of highlight all the different options that are available to people. So,
yeah. And I'm with you too, but I'll even catch myself wondering, like, am I just being an AA apologist, or is that part of having gone to AA meetings that I feel like I always have to defend it? But
I know,
as you know, I'm always, even I'll ask you after our podcast, I'll be like, oh, was I too hard on it, or am I being too bashing? And everybody will be like, no, you weren't at all. But
yeah, I know, we're afraid to bash. We call it bashing, but it's not really. It's honest criticism based upon our experience. And I don't hate anything. I'm not really anti anything other. Well, I am anti crazy cultish people, but I'm for the most part, I really support anything that anyone can do to get sober.
I suppose it should be no surprise, but it's very much the response of like an alcoholic family system for people to respond that way, to be like, no, no outside voices. No, don't question how things work here. You don't bring that up. It very much fits with that pattern of growing up in an alcoholic home. And so it's no shock that a 12-step community kind of responds in that manner too, because everybody's been conditioned. Most people that go there have been conditioned to react that way.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. So anyway, so back in 2015, I started that website, AA Beyond Belief, you know, about all that. And then we did started a podcast there, and that podcast is actually doing really well. That was my first introduction to podcasting, and what was so unique about that is like we had an audience like right from the beginning. You know, we had that little niche, and the podcast really took off, and I never have any problem getting guests. There's plenty of people who download it from all over the world. It's really something else. So I assumed that that this podcast would be almost just as easy. I'm finding it a little more difficult. You know, we've had some guests, but it's not easy to get these guests. I think I can reach out to some of the people that, some of the authors and so forth that, I had on the other podcast that might like to join us. But, I don't know. What are your thoughts about, you know, this podcast and what direction we can take it?
Well, I'm willing to be along for the ride wherever you want to go, but I understand that too, that not as many, I think the word secular, most people not even sure what it means sometimes. And I think sometimes it's easy to throw the baby out with the bathwater. If you go away from a 12-step community, you just want to get away as far away from it as possible, but it can be tough that way. But, and then AA too and 12-step community has that built-in obligation of service. So if you're sharing your story or talking about it, you feel like you're being of service. So, I don't know. It can be tough. You know me, I always, that's another thing about me. I love films and the way you can use those to discuss a topic. I think that wouldn't be bad to bring one of those in here or there, but I mean, I know our audience is going to be limited for a while until we can get some people going, but you know, no matter what, this is the movement of society. Like society is becoming more secular, good, bad, worse, otherwise whatnot. I mean, and I believe I can't speak for you, but we both still want to do this because it does help people. It helps us, and it can help other people to let you know that you don't have to throw the baby out with the bathwater. You can still be sober and not want to have anything to do with 12-step.
Well, I have learned so much from podcasting, not just about, you know, I love everything about it. I mean, I love the technology. I love learning how to do all the audio editing. And now I'm really getting into YouTubing and doing the live streaming. I love that component of it. But I also like what I learn from people who I talk to and having the opportunity to talk to them. That has really changed me, really. That, and also you do learn some basic communication skills as well. It's just been very helpful to me. It's something I really enjoy. I think if I wasn't able to podcast about this, I would find something to podcast about. I don't know. but
I have some people I could reach out to too, and be a little bit more assertive about that as well.
Well, I did reach out to a YouTuber. Her name is Katie Lane, and she's a really incredible spokesperson for the Sinclair Method. She's got a website called Embody Daily, and you can just check her out on YouTube, Katie Lane, Embody Daily. And I haven't heard back from her she said that she'd come on the podcast, and we were trying to set up a date. I just haven't firmed up the date with her. I'm hoping it'll be next weekend. If not, then maybe it'll have to be later on in the month. But she has quite an audience. So if, you know, the people who, you know, visit her YouTube channel learn about us, then that might help us too. So, but, you know, I'm not too hung up about all that. As long as we enjoy it and we can find some things to talk about, you know, just let things go where they will go. I was going to ask you, you know, you talked about how most people don't know what secular means, or a lot of people don't know what secular means. David Bull, you know, who we had on, and the author of Parallel Universes, he gave me some advice early on. He said, stay away from the words atheist and agnostic. He says they're too politically charged. Do you think that they really are? Do you think atheist is a bad word, or it has a negative connotation?
Yeah, around here I for sure do. But I think amongst people who are atheists or agnostics, it doesn't so much. So maybe if that's our target market, for lack of a better word, there's nothing wrong with using those words. But around here for sure, like even if I would say to somebody, I try to be honest about what I believe or not believe if it comes up when I'm talking with people. Like the other day I was talking with someone and I was asking him about, he had moved to town here, and I was asking him about, I could tell by what he was saying and being service-minded that he was probably a religious gentleman. And I said, well, how have you found the faith community around here? Has it been difficult to find a church and whatnot? And he said, no, it hasn't at all. And, you know, I was just using good listening and people skills and trying to, you know. And then he said, oh, why, what church do you attend? And I said, well, I don't. I'm a non-believer. I guess some people would say atheist. And then as soon as I mentioned the word atheist, you could just kind of see on his face, like, wow. So sometimes I'll be more careful and use the word non-believer. But I mean, I don't know, like you and I have talked about, there's so many ways to look at it. To me, it's two different questions. Agnostic means I don't believe it's knowable to know whether there's a God or not. And atheist means I don't have a belief in a God. It doesn't mean I know there's no God, but I don't have a belief in that.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right. It's not even disbelieving. It's just that I don't have that belief. That fits me so perfectly. I mean, that's always what I've been. I think there've been times in my life when I have tried to believe and found that I couldn't. And I remember thinking, well, there must be something wrong with me because I can't believe like other people believe, you know. And I thought maybe it's because I don't have this background of going to church. I don't know enough about religion. But it just turns out there's something about me that just finds it almost impossible to have a faith in some God. I can't do that. So that's me. I just lack any belief. Not that I necessarily, it's like, how can you disbelieve in something that, you know, I guess it's a disbelief too. I don't know.
But well, anyway. And the truth is there are so many degrees of belief. You know, you've got my father-in-law who's a devout Catholic who believes in all the rites and rituals. And it's almost like the rites and rituals are more his religion than the actual belief that is involved in the religion. And then you've got people like me who grew up Methodist who just think, oh yeah, we're just nice people. And we go and we shake hands, we have coffee and donuts, and we all sit at church and sing these old hymns. And then you've got, you know, so there's all degrees of belief. My wife was talking with one of our daughter's friend's parents, and they were taking their daughter to a preschool that was at a church, but they didn't think it was very religious, or they were told it wasn't. And then their four-year-old is just getting told all these Bible stories all day long. They were told that it was more education than it was biblical stuff. So now they're bothered because it feels like it's all Bible and no education. So, yeah, I mean, there are so many shades of belief, you know, but there are so many people, there are quite a lot of people who are just not willing to, if I ask them questions and I talk a little bit further, I think, well, the only difference between me and them is that they can't jump over to there might not be a God. They have to think, well, there's some reason for all of this. There has to be, or why would this exist, or that? That's the big leap. And I do find that people sometimes just assume that if I don't believe in a God or an acting God or whatever you want to call that, then it means that I think there's no purpose, that there's no way to find hope or purpose. But that's not what I found in my walk.
Yeah. There's also, I think, a kind of a natural fear of death and what comes after it. Like, I think nothing comes after it, but I've kind of gotten myself comfortable with that. But if you kind of grow up thinking that, okay, there's a happy existence after this, and I'm going to see everybody and we're going to have a great time. If you kind of grow up with that thought in the back of your mind, and then you kind of realize, no, it's just going to be nothing like it was before I was born. It's kind of unsettling, isn't it?
You know,
it
sure can be. Yeah.
It's kind of nice to think that it never ends, that we just go on with another existence.
Right. I probably could be accused of being pessimistic, but you know, the world can be so hard and so tough and can feel really brutal. And you know, you get social media and the media and stuff can just exacerbate a person's feelings of dread, that it would be very nice to think that everything's not like that after this is all over. It's like, but then there's a part of me that says too, this thought that paradise or happiness is to be somewhere in this nether world later. It's a way to cope with the fact that we don't feel like we have the power to do what we can to change what we know exists for sure, the right here and right now. So on some level, just like alcohol can be a negative coping mechanism for people in the world, this, here's my judgmentalism against believers. Sometimes belief can be used as that, like a way to cope with the world and avoid the fact that we feel powerless to change the world that exists right here, right now.
Absolutely. It's God's will. So, you know, things are going to happen and there's nothing we can do about it, which is anyway.
And my mom is a prime example of that. She's somebody who's very much, she utilizes her religion to keep that distance from taking a hard look at that. And I totally get why people do that. Cause like you said, it's scary. It can be very scary.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting how, you know, even in recovery from addiction, that religion has made its way. And it's not just AA people. I mean, there's this whole spiritual component behind recovery. If you look at like Tommy Rosen in Recovery 2.0, he's a very, he's kind of a spiritual kind of a guy. He's not anti anything, but he's very spiritual. And a lot of people in recovery, whether or not they're in a 12-step program or not, they have that very important spiritual aspect. And I think the way that I understand that there's a need for that is that the change that comes about from going from addict to not using is so dramatic, and it seems like it's very dramatic, and you're doing something that you didn't think you could do. So it seems like it takes on this supernatural quality, you know, and it almost feels that way when you go. I remember when I first stopped drinking, it was like, I swear to God, I would be driving down the road and it's like I noticed the grass was green and the sky was blue and colors. It just seemed like something amazing that just happened. And so I can understand where if people are having that experience, that they will attribute it to some sort of supernatural, you know, God thing.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think there's a thing called anhedonia, and it's like when you first get sober, everything's just very blah. And then I think once your brain starts to heal and all the, you know, more normal chemical reactions come to it, you do start noticing things like that. But then it's also, so a lot of people need to be reminded that when they first get sober, you're going to have this anhedonia state.
Interesting. Like, I never heard that before. So there's something to that.
Yeah, everything seems very gray and black. And, you know, obviously your body's adjusting to the fact you're not giving it alcohol all the time too. But even on another level, like you said, it is a perspective change. It's not just chemical. It is the fact you're not so distracted by the fact you're hungover and all you can think about is how crappy you feel. Your world goes from being like this to being like just opening up to being more. And, you know, 12 step uses a lot of lingo about people being self-centered and selfish. Well, when you're hungover and or drunk all the time, your world does kind of close in like this. So it would make sense that you seem very selfish and self-centered. So when that perspective opens up and you're not feeling like crap all the time and you're not so focused on whatever you may perceive that you need as far as a chemical or not, all of a sudden you can have more empathy or more concern for another person and things like that. And you're making connections with other people and you're feeling more connected to your surroundings. I can see how that does feel like a very spiritual experience.
Boy, I remember that, like during that first year of sobriety, and I would be able to do things like you said, you know, because I'm not hungover now. And I could like read the paper in the morning, and just that something simple like that, I would think back to like, boy, it's been a long time since I've been able to do this, since I did this. Cause when I was growing up as a kid, it's kind of weird, but I've always been kind of into the news and politics and stuff. And I mean, from little kid, and I would read the newspaper and I'd have conversations with my father, and it was something I always enjoyed. So all my life, I would always be reading the New York Times or the Leavenworth Times or something, you know, reading the paper. And then I stopped during my drinking years. That wasn't going on. You know, Sundays were horrible. I was hungry. I was sick. I was hungover. And so then I got sober and it was like, oh, I'm reading the paper on a Sunday morning. How nice.
One of those signs that you have a problem is when some of the activities that you used to enjoy kind of start to fall by the wayside.
Interesting. Yeah.
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 And yeah, they do. Yeah, for sure. And you were talking earlier about growing up in a family with mental illness, and that's why it is similar, because with mental illness, if you're raising kids and you have severe mental illness, especially, your world kind of goes like this with your mental illness. So it's hard for you to be attentive to your children's needs and be attentive to their feelings. So same thing if you're like I was describing earlier, if you're drunk or hungover all the time, you're not even able to tune into what's going on around you. So it tends to have the same result on children. So even my mom, she was addicted to cigarettes the whole time I was growing up. So I'm sure on some level, it was hard for her to give me emotionally what I needed because she was always needing to go light another cigarette. All the pictures growing up, there's a lot of pictures of me, like when I'm 3 or 4, like clinging to my mom's side while she's sitting there leaning against the counter smoking a cigarette, you know. And I suppose you could say the same for food for certain people or just really any personality characteristic on some level as well. But the problem that comes from it is not being able to be open to literally the child near you and being open to their needs and having a connection with them. So anything that gets in the way of that can cause a problem.
You know, speaking of food, that's another topic I'd like to address on this podcast. I did on the other podcast. But, you know, I look at myself, I've never been like grossly obese or anything. But I'm overweight right now. I'd like to get back in shape and eat better. And I do find it kind of hard. You know, I find it hard to stay away from junk food and stuff like that. And, you know, I understand how there is an addiction going on there with, you know, sugar and so forth. It does the same kind of thing to your brain that drugs do, maybe not to the same degree, but you know, it still affects you. But I've struggled with that all the time. It's like mentally, I know that it's what I'm eating is not good for me, but boy, it's really hard for me to kind of stop and control, have some sort of control over that. Again, I don't know if I would call myself an addict, overeating addict or not, but.
And what's in a name, I guess, but I have found too, my wife and I are kind of doing a low carb thing right now. And I feel like a carb calls for more carbs. Like if I was to eat, like my wife will make these keto donuts and stuff, and I don't want more than one, but like if I was to eat that full sugar donut, like one would ask for another on some level. So it's kind of like drinking for me that way. But I think that's everybody's different, I think, with their metabolism and how their body processes food. But I have found that now that I'm not eating as many carbs, I don't crave near as many carbs. But when I start to eat a little bit of carbs, I want a whole lot more carbs. So it's
isn't that interesting? I was just thinking, you know, last weekend my wife and I bought some Girl Scout cookies. I could sit down and eat an entire box of those damn things without any problem. Could I eat an entire bag of carrots? No.
Right. No. Yeah. No.
But Girl Scout cookies, no problem.
Right. Well, so, it's just like when I would go out to the bar, I could probably have 18 to 24 beers. I couldn't have drank 18 to 24 Cokes.
Right.
Well, but if there was alcohol mixed in them, I probably could, but. Yeah, it's there's something about the blood sugar spiking and then getting the insulin spike after that and the cycle that that creates, I think, that all makes very good sense. I think whether this whole low-carb craze right now will stick around or not, I think in general is in this culture, we eat way too many carbs, just way too many.
Yep. And that turns straight into sugar.
Yeah. Carbs, sugar, yep, same effect.
So, yeah, that'd be a nice topic to explore. And there's some really... Oh, there's some good people out there. I'm thinking Dr. Vera Tarman. She has a Facebook group called Food Addiction Recovery or Food Addiction Support Group. I'm Sweet Enough. Anyway, Vera Tarman. She's a doctor up in Toronto. She is like the director of like one of the better known rehabs up there. And she treats all sorts of addictions, but her specialty is food addiction and sugar addiction. And she wrote a book called Food Junkies. Anyway, she's a wonderful person. Very nice. Very interesting. It'd be good to have her on sometime too, if she would be willing to.
I'll say this about secular recovery too. It feels like everything's so defined in especially 12-step communities, where like you either have to be an addict or an alcoholic or this or that. And that definition can be good for a person early on so that you identify something as an issue. But I found the longer I'm sober and more in secular recovery, it just becomes about healthy living, right? Rather than just, am I a food addict or am I not? Or
yeah,
am I
why does that even matter? It's like, you know, well, that, hey, Girl Scout cookies can't be healthy for you. Can't be good. Right. It can't be good to eat a whole box of Girl Scout cookies. And why does it matter if I'm an addict or not? In a way, it's like, it almost makes it harder to do anything about, because you say, oh, I'm an addict. So it's something that's so difficult to overcome. It's beyond my control. I've got this thing that compels me to eat an entire box.
Which for some people, even in 12-step communities, can become a scapegoat too, or an excuse. Well, I'm just an addict. I'm just an alcoholic. Or especially if you get in meetings where people talk about, yeah, it was just a matter of time. I was born that way. I have the right genetic makeup. As soon as I took the first drink, that's exactly what I was. Now, again, it's great. It's great to realize that about yourself so that you can do something about it. But the label, I'm not sure. Yeah. I don't want to ever forget that I have an issue with it, but I don't know. Labeling's touchy.
Yeah, that's a good point. And also, it's like if it's also kind of that all or nothing kind of thinking about it. It's like, you know, I'm really bad about that, especially when it comes to trying to get healthy and control my food. It's just I go into some crazy things. But
oh, me too. Going to eat good this week, and then I eat bad on Thursday, and then it's like, well, I might as well eat bad Friday through Sunday and start again on Monday. Well, what's the magic about Monday? You know, those are all just that's some CBT work right there.
Well, talking about something that doesn't really have to do with addiction per se, but it's going to be interesting to see what happens with this coronavirus thing and if it's going to keep people from going outdoors and so forth. Because I was thinking about that, you know, like, okay, for work, you know, it's not a big deal because we can work from home, you know, and they're already at work. They're saying that they've stopped international travel. They've even stopped meetings where large groups of people get together. And so I could see us working from home. And I was thinking, you know, I do want to go to the gym again, but boy, that's a good place to get germs. I don't know where this thing's going to go.
Well, it's tricky. Again, it's the all or nothing thinking. You know, you hear some people in the media are talking about how it's just a hoax, quote, a hoax. I don't know who might have said
that. I don't think it's a hoax.
but, you know, it's again, everything gets overblown, but it already seems like it's exceeded what all the other ones, the SARS and the H1N1, which, I mean, again, it is just, it's from what I hear, it's more of a strain of the cold than a flu necessarily, but.
Yeah, and it's dangerous. It's most dangerous for like older people, like in the in their 80s.
Older, you know? I'll tell you what, though, I go to places where I take the kids, you know, like children's museums and stuff like that. I definitely know seems like there's less people going than there were. So the way I'm made up, I'm not apt to worry about that stuff that much. But again, all or nothing thinking. it's not nothing, but it's not the end of the world either. You know, it's something in between, and we should do things we can to try and not, you know, I think it's good to quarantine people if it works, and trust scientists to do what they think is probably best for our communities. So, but it does, that fear gets stoked up and you never know.
Yeah. I'm going to try to just keep living my life as normal and just kind of be aware of things and wash my hands and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, it's kind of off topic, but it's just something that's been kind of on my mind thinking about a little bit, because I guess
it's a good example of that all or nothing thinking that it's easy to slip in, and how we need to remind ourselves about the middle ground plenty.
Yeah. So anyway, so we've gone for 40 minutes. That's pretty good. We've managed to find something to talk about. I hope that this has been interesting to listen to for anyone who might happen upon this. So I could imagine someday somebody is kind of bored. They're sitting at home. They're on YouTube. They're searching for stuff. They're saying secular sobriety. That looks interesting. And they come across this podcast and they listen to it. So if that's you, I hope that you've enjoyed this. So anyway, here we go. And that's it for another episode of My Secular Sobriety. Thank you, Ben, very much. It's been nice talking to you.
Hopefully
we're going to be back next week, and hopefully we're going to have a guest. Now, Ben, you say you might not be on next week.
Yes, I may be going to Minnesota for the weekend, so it would probably be hard to jump on here.
Okay. So hopefully we will have Katie on next week. If not, then it'll be later in the month. She said she might be able to do it next week, and if not, she could do it sometime after March 24th. So I'll stay in touch with her and see what happens. And if we don't have a guest, I'll just jump on and do something. I'm kind of committed to doing something every week. So
nice.
All right. Well, thanks, Ben. I appreciate it.
Yep.